Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our service this morning. It's good to see you all and wish you a happy new year, as I don't think I have yet. Okay, what present would you buy for a one-year-old child, baby, toddler, don't know what you call them? Yes. A babysitter. Oh, that'd be a good present for the parents, maybe. Yes. A baby toy, a very good idea. Yes. Baby building blocks. Yes, excellent idea. Yes. A pet rock. A pet rock so they can learn to take responsibility for something. Starting early, it's good. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, a ride-on toy. Yes, excellent. Any other? Yeah. Sensory blocks. Very good. A clean potty. Yes, well, you know, you could. Anything? Shall I? You see, here, I looked this up. The top 10 gifts for one-year-olds. A shape sorter. Quite good. Stackable blocks. A baby walker. Baby's first year picture frame. Money for savings or ISAs or things like that. Board books, you know, the personalised clothing. Bath time toys. Mega blocks. Big Lego. Or ride-on toys. Yeah. Top 10 gifts for a one-year-old baby. Now, why am I doing this? Why am I asking you this? Because today we are celebrating Epiphany, the time when the wise men arrived with their gifts for Jesus. We don't know how old Jesus was at that time, but we know he wasn't a tiny baby, and we know that he wasn't older than two. So I was sort of guessing on one. The best presents for a one-year-old. And of course, the wise men bought wonderful presents for a one-year-old. Gold would not be bad though, would it? Be useful. Frankincense, smelling perfume. And myrrh, an ointment. Odd gifts for a one-year-old, but they were gifts that showed that Jesus was not just a human baby. He was, in fact, a king. And actually, he was God. And that's what the gift showed. So this morning, we're going to worship Jesus, our Lord, our Saviour, and our God. After we have celebrated Christmas and his birth, we're going to worship him this morning. So we're going to stand to sing our first song. Jesus is Lord. Creation's voice proclaims it. Let's stand together. Well, we enter Epiphany, which I believe was on Tuesday, though I'm not, well, I was brought up an Anglican, but I'm not an Anglican, so I don't really know all the dates, but I believe Epiphany was on Tuesday. And so we're looking at it today, at the story of the wise men who came to visit Jesus. We showed a DVD quite a few years ago, one Christmas, which is called The Bethlehem Challenge, which is a story of the wise men with a little bit of a twist, based on Top Gear, if any of you ever watched that programme. And we're going to show it again now. So sit back and enjoy the Bethlehem Challenge.
We're wise, there are three of us, and we never say no to a challenge. So welcome to the three wise men who never say no to a challenge. Challenge. We discovered a very special new star, one that means a new king is about to be born. Our challenge is to follow that star and find the king. To make the challenge more challenging, we've each got just 100 shekels to buy transport. And to make this challenging challenge even more challenging, we each have to bring a special gift that fits, well, for a king. That's quite challenging. And that's how Melchizedek the Merry Man, Balthazar the Boffin, and Kasparov the Quite Intelligent, started a challenge that would go down in history. But first, My transport is this lumpy beast. Smells and spits, but on the bright side, it has somewhere to put the cup. I've selected this fine house on wheels, complete with two excellent beasts of burden, and its own toilet. I, however, have gotten retro classic, with its 1976 Ford Cortina Mark III 1.6-litre engine, flame red with black trim, because when it's very hot, otherwise manifestly very cool. Next, they had to select their gift. I got gold, because a king deserves the very best. I've got frankincense, perfume, well, go to the toilet if you will. It's what you give to someone who might come up with. I've got myrrh. A mirror? No, myrrh. It's very precious oil, and it has something to do with suffering and even death. As they set off, they wondered at the baby king, who would be welcomed by gifts that spoke of kingship, suffering, and God. The instructions said follow the star. But there are billions. Look at that. A good idea, but perhaps surprisingly, this roadmap only has ground-based directions, like roads. Does that revolting beast of yours have Saturn? It's not working. Well, it's working technically, but it can't tell us where we are. Pathetic. Well, it's the first century. There are no satellites. In fact, nothing flies at all, except the flies. They fly. So, we can't nav, and we can't sat. What a rubbish challenge. Ask directions. We're wise men. Wise men don't ask directions. Look, there's a star. That's very bright and is moving. Follow that star. On the way, the Cortina ran out of petrol, and the next service station was 2,000 years away. The camera was too wide for the city gate. It was like getting through, well, the eye of a needle. And the caravan blocked the road, starting a tradition that continues to this very day. But they never took their eyes off the sun, except once. In Jerusalem, everything was halted by the rain.
Oi! Who do you think you are? King Herod?
Actually, I am. Oh, isn't that a 1976 Ford Cortina? Mark III, 1.6-litre engine? My father had one of the first models. Do come to tea. King Herod really wanted the Cortina. The wise men explained that they needed it to find a newborn king. Herod told them to work out where this new king was to be born, and to come back and tell him, with the Cortina, so that he could welcome a person by killing him a bit. They finished their sums late at night, and texted Herod. From that moment, the challenge became known as the Bethlehem Challenge. I don't suppose any of you had a dream last night in which we were warned not to go back to Herod after we find the child, but to go home a different way.
I'm not that comfortable about this, but yes.
Me too, but that's the last dream we share, ever. So they decided not to go back to Herod, which was probably wise, even if you did have good taste in class. They travelled on, knowing that the challenging challenge that had been made a bit more challenging had just got more challenging. Then, one silent, holy night, the sun stopped, right over a stable. They were surprised to find they weren't the only ones there. There were shepherds, there were all kinds of animals. There were even angels. Suddenly, it didn't seem to matter that they were not the first to arrive, or who won. Tonight, they were about to meet the newborn king, Jesus. It's funny how the end of the Bethlehem Challenge felt like the beginning. One by one, they gave their presents to the child. Not kissing the doll. Castor's perfume. Balthazar's expensive oil. And every gift somehow seemed perfect. Looking up at the star, they knew that overcoming every challenge to meet this king, and deciding to keep following him from this moment on, made them very wise men indeed. And with that, the Bethlehem Challenge ended, or perhaps, began.
course, it's not entirely true to the original story, which is why we're going to read from the Bible, the book of Matthew, chapter 2, and we're going to read about the visit of the wise men to Jesus. Starting at verse 1. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem, in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judea, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. Three wise men, the kings, the seers, or the magi, as we don't really know what to call them, are something of a confusion to us in the West. For a start, we don't even know what to refer to them as I said. And often we find them slightly mysterious, these people who came after Jesus was born. We don't know what they might have looked like. We don't know how they would have travelled. We don't know how many of them there were. Although we do know that they came from the east. And because of this, we like to think that we have it all pinned down. We say there were at least three of them because there were three gifts. And we dress them up in fine clothes because we believe they were rich. And we depict them on camels. Often we have this silhouetted against a night sky because it looks quite nice on a Christmas evening. But in all truth, we don't really know much about these travellers from the east. We do know that they studied the stars, that they were astronomers or astrologers, as the two things went together in those days. And they did believe that if an amazing event happened on Earth, then it would be mirrored in the skies. So they used to study the skies. They believed that one affected the other, that the two were connected. And of course, as we said, they came from the east, possibly from Persia, but most probably from Babylonia. They were definitely not Jewish, and so they had no expectation that a new king was on the way. They travelled not knowing what they might find when they got to wherever it is they were going, but knowing that it was something special because this event had changed the skies. The truth is, we don't know much about these mysterious men who studied the stars and came from the east. We like to guess and we like to surmise, and lots of books have been written about it, but we really don't know. However, we can learn a lot from them. And so we're going to look at that today. For a start, they lived their lives looking up. They didn't spend their time living with their eyes down, rushing into the busyness of life, never pausing to look around or look above them. Instead, they spent their time looking up at the bigger picture, at the skies, at the stars, at the planets as it was for them, at those things which they believed would show them where important things were happening on Earth. And having looked up the skies, they also took action. They looked, they saw, and then they followed. We're not sure, of course, what the star was, whether indeed it was a star, or maybe it was a comet, or perhaps it was a nova, or perhaps it was some mysterious planetary event that happened in those days. But whatever it was, when they saw it and saw that it was different, saw that it stood out, that it shone brightly, that it transformed the night sky which they were so used to looking at, they decided to follow it. We don't know what they left behind. We don't know how long it took them to take this journey. We don't know how dangerous it was or how harrowing it was. All we know is that when they saw the most amazing sight they'd ever seen in the sky above them, they didn't hesitate, but instead they left what they were doing and they investigated further. And on investigating, after a long journey to a distant land, they finally arrived at the place where Jesus was, and they worshipped him. This baby who'd been born King of the Jews, a small child in a tiny backwater town, far from the places of Herod and his armies and the scribes and the Pharisees and the wise people. A baby who they'd probably never heard of. Certainly a child they'd not been expecting to arrive. And they worshipped him. Because in their investigations, they believed they had found a true king. So Jew or not, they bowed the knee and worshipped the King of the Jews. And not only did they worship, but they also gave him amazing gifts. They showered him with the very, very best. Gold. Many say this was to show Jesus was a king. Incense to allude to his, or frankincense, to allude to his priestly role. And myrrh, perhaps a sign of the death he was to suffer. But even if these gifts were known for these symbols or not, which they may not have been in those times, they were certainly gifts that were fit for a king. They were gifts that people would have given to gods. They were gifts fit for God himself. There was no doubt that these travellers had brought their very best to the one who had come to earth for them, even though they didn't know it at the time. And it's amazing when we think about it that these mysterious travellers have so much to show us about the way we can live for Jesus. That in a world where so often just to survive we keep our heads down, we focus on the task ahead, the task in front of us, we hardly dare to look up or take a moment to pause and reflect, that these magi show us the value of looking at the bigger picture, of every now and again stepping back instead of rushing in, taking a moment, pausing to look past all the busyness at what is above, if you like, to what God would like to show us. And then when we see what God would like to show us, maybe having the courage to investigate what this might mean. You know, it's all very well having a spiritual moment once or twice or a few times in our lives, as we might describe it, having a moment where we really feel we connect with God and God is doing something special. Or it's all very well thinking, do you know, I really must find out more about Jesus. But if we never do anything about it, if we never spend the time investigating, if we never look past the baby who's born in a manger and think about the challenges he places on our lives, if we never start the long journey as the magi had the courage to do, then we simply let the moment pass and it just becomes a spiritual moment, or a time when God did something in our lives, or a time when we thought we really should do something about that. Which is a shame, because when the magi investigated, when they entered the long, hard journey towards the Son of God, and they found that little baby, they were so amazed, they were so in awe, they were so convinced that they had the faith to worship him and to give him the very best that they had, even though they didn't have half the answers as to who he was or what he was going to do. They didn't have the history of the prophecies. They didn't really know. but they worshipped and they gave their very best. And you know, if we have the courage to look up every now and again from our busy lives or from the projects which engross us or from the things which we hold in our hands, and if we give the time to investigate the things of God amongst everything else that we do in our lives, we may also find that for the first or the second time or the third time or the 100th time that we bow the knee to worship the one who has come to change the world. And not only that, but if we give our time and our energy to delve into the truths of Jesus, we may be taken to a place where we are willing to give our very best for the one who gave everything to us. We may find, just like the Magi, that our investigations lead not to the end of something, but to the start of something new in our lives. So as we tentatively make our way into 2015, I can't quite believe that we're here already. As we start the new year, post-Christmas, post-New Year celebrations, let's resolve to make this year different. Not to live another year of mediocrity or of terrible busyness where we rush around or of missed opportunities because we've just been so taken up with something else, but instead, from today, to live a year where we have the courage not only to pause and look up, but also to investigate, to worship, and to give our very best to the one who has given his very best for us. So let's pause for a moment. Let's take that moment to pause, to look up, if you like, to let the things which crowd in on us every day be pushed to one side for a moment, and to focus on the one who has given everything for us, to focus on Jesus. Let's take a moment of quiet. And as we pause in the quiet, I'm going to just read a reflection by Stephen Cottrell, who's written about Caspar, how one of the Magi may have felt when he saw the star and decided to follow. I am a stargazer. I have always had my head in the clouds. When I was a boy, I used to lie on the flat roof of our house and gaze at the stars. I would stretch out my arms and legs as wide as they would go so that I too might be a star and that they might gaze at me. My mother called me a dreamer. She couldn't understand the patterns of the night sky, did not even know there was anything to be read in their gentle changing constellations. But it is the moon that marks the months and pulls the tides. It is the stars that direct the traveller. On a stormy night when the fierce winds billow and surge, the sailor has nothing else to lean on. Most people learn to look down, not me. I would not let my horizon shift. So there were obstacles in my path. Let them trip me up. Better to keep looking upwards, to chase after dreams and stumble, than only ever let the few steps in front of you and spend a lifetime going round in circles, getting nowhere fast. That is me, a dream chaser, a stargazer, a misfit, a seer, a student of the cosmos and the galaxies. But I was also cautious. I like to look at the stars and interpret their movements, but I did not follow them myself. So when I saw a new star rising, I knew that it was my chance to change, my chance to follow, to awaken the dream inside me. For this star had to mean something. It had to lead somewhere. And so I set out, not very well prepared for travel, but with servants to help me and a purse on my belt, I took to the road. There were other travellers too, stargazers like me who searched the sky to see what promises it held. We found each other. We looked into the mirror of our own histories and saw a congruence of mind and will. And we banded together for conversation and for protection and for simple pleasures of companionship and common purpose. When everyone else was safe in bed, we were on the road moving westwards, following the star. It was a hard journey and a cold coming we had of it. There were some who made us welcome, but there were many more who feared the stranger. But still, in the chill twilight of a winter's day, we arrived in the town where the star rested. It didn't take many inquiries to find that there was indeed a mother and a newborn son. Behind the inn at the edge of the town was an outhouse, not much more than a stable, but sheltered from the rain and from the worst of the east wind that blew across the plain. We knocked on the door, feeling both excited and vaguely stupid. What had we come to see? What was the purpose of our journey? We hardly knew. We were men compelled, old men behaving like children, travelling on a whim with no particular destination in mind. Wise men behaving like fools, believing that stars led somewhere. A man about our age opened the door. He looked weary and wary, but there was a steadfast kindness in his eye that was also prepared to trust. He asked us our business, and even though we had come all this way believing that the star was followed the birth of a king, to each of us in the moment it seemed very foolish. So we just said, a child. We heard a child is born. We saw a star, we followed it. We didn't know what it means, but it led us here. He opened the door. He opened wide his arms to us. He welcomed us in. And there in a dark corner, wrapped in blankets and huddled against the cold and the clamour of the coming night, was the child, cradled in his mother's arms. We introduced ourselves. We went closer. We were tongue-tied and nervous. We didn't know whether to say everything or nothing. So we were silent for a while, just looking. But we had brought gifts, gifts for a king. They seemed somewhat out of place in this cramped squalor of these surroundings. At the same time, we realised they were perfect. We were part of a drama so much bigger than ourselves, something we would probably never understand properly. We simply had to carry on faithfully playing our part. We looked at each other and, without speaking, rummaged in our bags to retrieve the gifts. Gold, for gold belonged to a king. Sweet-smelling incense from Mesopotamia, for a king is also a priest and one who intercedes with gods as well as men. An ointment of myrrh, for death and birth belong together, framing the life of every man. We laid the gifts before the still and stirring child. We smiled inanely and shrugged our shoulders, for even the expensive beauty of the precious things we had bought paled against the greater light of newborn life. Then the mother and father told us their own strange story. Our tongues were unshackled by it. We explained about the star and the travelling, but also of Herod and what we felt for sure were his murderous intentions. We talked into the night, then slept, huddled against our animals for warmth in the makeshift shelter of the outhouse. We said our goodbyes in the harsh bitterness of the dawn. The road ahead of us will be treacherous and hard, but I tell you now, as we turn our faces away from Bethlehem, it doesn't feel like an ending. Something has begun here. Something that is to do with love. So as we resolve to be people who pause, look up, investigate, worship and give our very best, I pray we will be surprised by the God who gave everything for us, that he will walk with us, bless us, keep us, and lead our lives into a new time. Amen.